said talk to me, damn it, or else I'm gonna throw you in the fire!
You stupid bitch, you filthy!
Welcome back to Flyover State of Fear. We are with Kayla and Chris from Cult or Just Weird. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good.
Yeah.
Now that we get to talk to you guys again.
We're just happy to be back.
Yeah.
I know. We were talking just beforehand how, like, you thought it was before the pandemic, pre-pandy. I was like, it's mid or even sooner, but it was like almost 2 years ago, which is crazy.
I have no sense of time. I'm sorry.
It's awful. Like, I same way of just, oh no, it was 3 years ago.
Yep.
Shit. So I get it. We are missing Brian today, who was too afraid to come on the show to offend about Skinamarink. I mean, he wasn't afraid of Skinamarink. I think he got 20 minutes.
So I'm sorry. What would he be afraid of offending us for? I
think we just didn't want to have a fourth person completely shitting on, like, an art house. As I am willing to, we all are willing to just talk about the is a B.
Okay, but here's the thing, though. The thing is, like, with Skinamarink, I feel like that's kind of part of it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, part of the story of Skinamarink is that it's very polarizing.
Yes. So, I want to get in.
We love the movie.
Yeah.
But completely 10,000% understand hating it.
Gotcha. So I wish he was here. I might give some of that vibe. I don't know. I just finished it.
Well, we don't blame him.
But yeah, he'll hear it and go, really, you called me out? Yeah, I called you out. You wanted to be a co-host. Just kidding. So how have you guys been in the meantime, though? Anything?
Yeah, good. Show's going well. Still slowly growing. The last couple of years we've had some really good interviews, really good fan mail, so.
We're trying to do stuff this season where we can, like, go out and experience it, so.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
What have we done so far?
So, an example would be, like, we went to do Ecstatic Dance LA, so we did an episode about just, like, the idea of ecstatic dance and, like, rave culture.
Oh, interesting.
And so then we went to an actual event here in LA.
We went to a beach rave.
It was a beach rave, a silent disco beach rave.
With the headphones?
Yeah,
with
the headphones. Exactly. Yep.
That's pretty cool. I was at one, like, StumbleUpon once in New York City, like, 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was super fun. Like, I say this to someone who, like, despises, I hate dancing, I hate it. This was pretty fun.
Cool. No, it's unique in experience. I'm curious to listen to that one because it's like, I don't know. I know it's plenty of show, but, like, I feel like that'd be on a point about more leaning towards weird, but I'm sure there's people that take it to a cult extent and, like.
That's exactly. Yep. You nailed it. Yeah.
So, it's kind of like Skinamarink. I don't know. That's super interesting. And I like that you guys are, experimentally going out there and trying the stuff, at least within reason, I'm sure, just because this is a movie show, have you guys watched anything recently or anything like that? So you talked before, so I'm really curious what this was, like, good or bad,
good or anything at all,
just whatever you want to share to the world in a
month's
time from today.
We just made our way through, for the first time, the Twilight series of films.
This is her fault.
It's so much fun. I don't know.
It was fantastic.
It's a blast. It's like, talking about shitting on a thing. It's like, yeah. It's great to shit on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very fun to shit on.
I will say, Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson can do no wrong.
Yeah,
careers. Yeah. They are fantastic.
Oh, they
but it's a nuts. It is a nuts series.
Yeah. It's pretty batshit. Like, there's parts of it I think that are like, they're kind of cool. Like, I like that the vampires all have like a special power. I thought that was a neat little twist.
Yeah, I like. I mean, yeah, like the concept of it's, yeah, like there's like the unique take on it. They don't quite. They can kind of do sunlight through the trees, and they're right. Every vampire has its. But the as a series, I mean, I've. Last few years have also seen them all and been like, wow, these are a ton of fun and terrible. Like it's a great, so yeah. Bad, it's good, yeah. As a series. And,
just grooming the movies.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing.
Oh my God.
Is that it's like, oh, this is actually just about grooming. I'd heard the critique of like, okay, well, you know, Edward, he's like 100 and she's 17 and that's pretty gross. But I just, before I'd seen the movies, I just figured like, okay, well,
there's magic.
There's some vampire magic. They won't talk. They'll kind of sweep it under the rug and you can just kind of like suspend your disbelief. Nope.
It's forefront.
No, it's front and center.
And then the biggest offender, sorry if anyone's listening. I don't know why you'd be listening.
Spoilers.
You know,
yeah,
what I've been watching is Twilight. Is in the last movie, or like part one of the last, is Jacob imprinting on Renesmee, the little child who
their baby.
Is meant to be the baby, and she's like, you did my... That to me is the most like bonkers part of it all. To stay connected with Bella because he was so in love with her, but so he wants to stay with it. I'm with you guys. It's like, if you want to record four episodes just about Twilight, one like
we totally
hour,
could, I think. Yeah.
I'm in. Because at the same time, it does feature that, what, part two or whatever, one of the funnest, like, murder action sequences, battle sequences.
Yeah, the fight was pretty good.
Heads getting chopped off. People beans.
And then, like, the first movie is... Sorry you got me on Twilight right now. The first movie is, like... interestingly, like, artistic in a sense, like, it's a female director, there's certain things done that are done from a certain point, and then that the second movie comes and they abandon all of that, and it's like more from like, I would say, the male gaze and everything else, and like Bella, the whole thing is, it just mean there's so much to it. I'm once again word vomiting about Twilight.
It kind of switches, like, it kind of goes from like a romance movie to like a Marvel-ish No, like epic action.
Yeah, and then like the wedding, and then there's body horror, and like right after the wedding with her giving birth, and then you have like the creepiest looking like puppet child ever put on screen since like Mac and Me. You know, it's fucking. Well, I'm so happy you brought out. You didn't tell me that before we recorded, because. And I asked before, you just gave a chuckle.
It's a great series of films. Go do a watch. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, highly recommend it. I got nothing to add to that. I'll just move right into Skinamarink. So,
it's a prequel to Twilight, right?
Yeah, Skinamarink, the famed prequel to Twilight.
Right.
Famed. We could spin it that way. I'll save that. But a big thing about Skinamarink is it is kind of a blank slate to kind of do with what you want with its story.
Right.
So the summary is from Google, and we do this, just Google is a read up line. It's usually accurate or completely not. This is one sentence, and I think it's accurate. Two children wake up in the middle of the night to find their father is missing, and all the windows and doors in their home have vanished. That's it. That's all it is.
Perfect description is perfect.
That's the whole
thing. All it is.
Yeah.
So why Skinamarink? I think that's my biggest question. I've covered, I would say, one other movie that's close to, I found, like, abstract and not untalkable, because we're going to spend the next 40 minutes talking about it. But, like, we covered House Hsu Wants to Link the Late to the 70s Japanese, abstract kind of haunted house movie. The closest thing that I've covered since Skinamarink. Skinamarink, it's very different. So why Skinamarink?
Well, you can talk about it. It's just, there's no, like, the plot is already done. You already said the whole plot. But you have to talk about the vibes.
I would actually add one more thing to the plot. in addition to all the windows and doors being removed, the children slowly realize an entity is sharing the house with them. I would add that, but okay. as a very important piece of this.
And is that the Skinnamarink?
That's the Skinnamarink.
Maybe. No, it's not. I mean, it's not explicit.
No.
So,
but he asked us why, though.
There's so the why is my fault. Yeah. Very sorry.
No, Pa. I've been meaning to get to this why. What is the why? Yeah.
You might be shocked to learn that I get served a lot of TikToks about horror movies. That might be very shocking for everyone to hear.
So shocked.
It's not me.
Shocking.
I get it.
And so this movie, it started in the festival circuit, mm-hmm. and started getting served TikToks from folks who were able to see it in its early days of the festival circuit, basically saying like, this is the scariest movie I've ever seen. This is the kind of movie I've never seen anything like it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even accurately describe the feeling that I got while watching it. I'll try to describe it to you. And I was so intrigued by the way this is being described by people who were seeing it in those early days.
And you were showing me the TikToks.
I remember seeing the TikToks clearly.
Yeah. It got those.
The TikToks were so hype.
It got attention to me. Absolutely.
I didn't watch it at the time. This is not kosher, but I helped a TikToker find the movie.
Oh, that's
insane. And see you run.
That is something that happened.
Which, you know, saw a thing and said, go here, you know, and
right.
They listened. But yeah, I remember those TikToks. I mean, the buzz of this and word of mouth were like none other. And it's funny. I'm just so you and everyone listening, this is purposely open closet. The house is dark.
Yep. That's on theme.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it, but as you were talking, but so that got you interested. So did you watch this, in the theater or in, at home or like, when did you guys watch this?
In the theater.
We've seen it twice.
Okay.
We've seen it twice. We saw it twice in theaters. So I became deeply obsessed with the movie. It was like all that I could talk about for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, got the tickets.
For like 2 or 3 months. Yeah.
Got the tickets as soon as I possibly could. I mean, I was having nightmares about the movie before I saw it, just based off the trailer.
Yeah,
the trailer came out.
The trailer was mad scary, though. Yeah. Like, that was one of the scarier trailers, because it was just... I mean, I guess... It's interesting. Like, usually you think of the trailer as not really being the full movie, but this, like, the trailer for Skinamarink was like, no, that's what the movie is. It's just
I don't think I watched
an hour and a half of that.
Oh, you should watch the trailer.
I watched the TikToks, but I avoided the trailer.
You should watch the trailer. It's
okay.
Just the movie, but it, you know, 30 seconds instead of an hour and a half. And it's just very scary because it's very, like, I think the vibes aspect of it, like, kind of is in a concentrated form in the trailer. So it's pretty freaky.
It's vibes, that's the movie. But yeah, so I gotta check trailers are sometimes the scariest part of a movie that's not scary is the trailer they cut, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
it gave me nightmares.
that's not crazy. I honestly think I'm gonna be a little like heady tonight, just like it said, this movie's fresh for me today. I wish I saw it in the theaters. I had multiple opportunities. I remember a couple indie theaters in Jersey seeing, you know, they had it before the AMC run and talking to a friend about it. And then we never pulled the trigger on it and then had AMC run. That's the most impressive thing to me about this. I mean, your budget's $15,000. It's a art house, basically a student film.
Yeah.
Goes on to grossing a $2.1 million. And
incredible. That's the horror ROI for you, right? Yeah.
Like, and the word of mouth. It moved like a knife through butter, the word of mouth.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it's crazy it got a theatrical run. I mean, because this is right at the same time as comparable to just in the horror world of like how Terrifier 2 got a theatrical run.
Right. Right.
$250,000 movie. Grosses $15 million, gets this AMC run, people are passing out. A couple months later, hey, there's this another one. It's fucking crazy, and I can't, like you said, I can't explain it. And that's the most baffling part of this whole thing is right now, like I'm a Blu-ray collector and all that stuff. I could go buy a steelbook of Skinamarink, like a Blu-ray or a 4K, which makes no sense, of Skinamarink, but I can't get it of True Lies at Walmart.
What? True Lies? Walmart, it's a classic.
True Lies is not on Blu-ray. I just using that, you know, it's James Cameron's holding that in the Abyss hostage.
Just muted just because we have an ambulance going by. I just want to make sure you don't hear it.
Oh, you're good. That's what's the Skinamarink-ness of it all is mind-blowing. I still see TikTokers today that want the DVD collectors going, oh, picking up this one and go to Best Buy. I haven't watched it, but I heard crazy things. So today I did watch it, and I want to let you guys know I gave it, tried to make the best atmosphere I could. No one's home. My wife's out. Everyone's out. I put blankets over the window. I'm going to watch that.
You're brave.
It's 8:30 and it's 8:30 right now on the East Coast. I started at 5 when work got out. I put blankets over, except for the laptop, because I did take some notes. Ran it through and wanted to get us submerged because that's what you said before, Chris, is it's polarizing, right? Like, there's two types of people that watch this movie. I fucking hate it. It was the worst thing I've ever seen. And then you do find out they didn't give it any of the light. They didn't do the lights off. They didn't, they didn't set themselves up in the atmosphere.
Sure. Right.
Right. And because it's so vibey, like that's all there is. Like all there is to it really is the atmosphere. So if you have some incongruity there, I totally understand why people don't like it. And I also get plot is important. And if you don't approach it with like a very open mind in terms of like, I'm just going to let this wash over me, then yeah, like the lack of like narrative drive is, I totally get it.
I think that is a flaw. And this kind of goes for any indie, like real indie movie. And I use the word flaw lightly. A flaw of something being available to a mass audience where there's like three people in my day-to-day life that I would say, hey man, go watch Skinamarink.
Right.
You know, but like, you know, I wouldn't, the norm, a normie, 98% of people, I'd be like, yeah, you go watch the Pope's Exorcist, you know, like,
right.
I will also argue that I think that if one is unable to see this movie in the theater, I don't actually know if the theater is the best viewing experience. I actually think the best viewing experience might be in bed on your laptop at midnight with headphones in.
Ooh, and lights off. That
might be, because it's and I know we'll get into, you know, it's the meat intimate. Of the film at some point, but it's a very intimate movie, and it has, while it's not analog horror, it definitely has some elements or some inspirations of analog horror. So I think that means that it can be appreciated on the laptop. It's not like putting in, and trying to appreciate on your laptop. You can appreciate this movie on your laptop with the headphones alone at night, like you're watching something that you shouldn't be.
That's a great point. I like that you said you're watching something you shouldn't be, because I was texting some friends about this afterwards. What do you think? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, it feels like the movie that tweens, middle schoolers, whatever, dare themselves to watch or watch at sleepovers. Like, I have to imagine kids are doing that currently. Kind of like how we just covered when we covered the Blair Witch Project and things like that. Like, that's what it feels like. It's more of a horror experience than a good movie. Like, I don't know if I'm we'll come out of this conversation this is a review show, but being like, yeah, it kicked ass. But it's terrifying. I mean, like I said, I'm comparing my experience at home. Like, it was light out when it started, so I didn't have any lights on. It's getting dark out. I know I'm going to be freaked out the minute I walk out. And when I was watching it, so it was like my wife's birthday, like a month ago. And she likes to keep the balloons as long as possible. And so in the edge of her thing, there's like big happy birthday, like body size. Yeah. And they're just that because they're kind of deflated, so you hear the they might get popped tonight, to be honest with you.
Yeah. You don't want that out of the
but it was it was not helping my it was helping my experience, but it was also like I was creeped out, we'll just put it that way. But I get that, like, watch it on your laptop, watch it more intimately. Like, I'd imagine this, the perfect experience almost being like dig out a CRTV and like somehow figure a way to put it on there.
That would be great. I mean, it's, it really is like the viewing experience of like playing Bloody Mary when you're 12. Like, that's,
still it scares me.
I can't. Yeah.
I'm like, oh shit.
He's able to really get my goat if we're in a dark room and there's a mirror. If you start saying, I will literally leave. I cannot.
I can, it's funny, Candyman is my favorite one of my favorite movies, but I can't sleep in a room with the mirror facing me because of that to this day, because I was so traumatized as a child. So it's funny you bring, but it's all the same equipment. That was the exact vibe I got. I think one of the most interesting, let's kind of start in the movie is, also, the first thing that comes to mind, right, or at least for me, is the run, when I'm looking at it, I'm like, why is this an hour and 40 minutes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This to me is like, oh, this is 80 minutes. You probably get people that are like raving. I mean, across the board raving about it.
Yep.
But I've come to the conclusion that the time is very purposeful for the amount you're supposed to spend and get annoyed and creeped, like tricks to be played on you.
I agree with you. I think that it's, and I see that is a criticism often, is that it's too long. It could have been done in an hour. It could have been done in 75 minutes. It could have been done. I think that would have been a different movie and a different experience. Like, this needs you to feel the uncomfortable length. This needs you to be lulled in multiple times to then be, it needs you to have that uncomfortable experience of, when is this going to be? I mean, when I was watching the movie the first time, I literally was, when is this going to be over? Is this over yet? Is this over yet? Can I look away? You don't get that part of the experience if you shorten it down to the director did a lot of YouTube videos before this. Yeah. You don't get the same experience if you shorten this to a YouTube video.
No. So that's a great point. And that's why I say, I wish I saw it in the theaters. It would really like, defer me, Ellie, and myself, like not pulling out my phone, not doing anything. I'm here, you know. And it's not really one where you're going to be like, "Wow, I'm munching on candy and drinking soda and popcorn." Like, it's not.
I mean, I was watching it through my fingers. Like, I don't tend to watch things through my fingers. This was like, I'm shrinking in my seat. I am putting my hands to my face. I am looking away. It was a very visceral viewing experience.
Yeah.
In theaters that first time.
And I think a lot of that has to do, right, like the looking through your fingers, and that is as a trained, like, we're all trained viewers of like story and movies, and you're like waiting for the jump scare. I'm waiting for like the demon to pop out or whatever the thing is, and it really never happens in that movie. Like, the movie is it happens, but the movie really, like, gross term, but like edges you the whole time.
yeah
you know, and if you hear there, like, the best thing it has going for it is that it doesn't let you have a release.
No,
there's right. No,
you've been tortured.
It is 1995. I know we've just kind of been talking about the vibes and everything of this, and there are parts of the movie that they do did really stand out. And the way it does start off is we have, like, the dad. There's, like, a dad figure, and he's, like, he fell down the stairs, but he's fine. But then things just disappear, and we're left with the two kids.
Right.
Right. And even when the dad's talking, I mean, it's, like, off screen. It's, he's on the phone, presumably, with some other authority figure or something. But it's not, even that's not super clear in terms of, like, presentation.
You essentially never see a character's face in this film.
Well, it's a lot like, yes, you're absolutely right. Character's face and the parents of the light, like, they use cartoons. It's a lot like old cartoons. You see their feet and just them talking, and then you see the action of, like, Tiny Toons running around.
Right.
I mean, that was the thing, like, that you said, it's analog in the sense of, like, everything going on with this movie and the consistent sound of like the record, like if you leave it on and play, like that fuzz
ambient scratch,
yeah, and the grains weird, all the way up
noise, yeah,
that first, so that all that we just talked about where that bit happens in the first 15 minutes, and I was trying to figure out, okay, what's going on, and especially the first 10 minutes, the darkness of everything, to me, I think it wants you to see things in it and move and go for it, and whether it's there or not. And but then it sounds weird. It does pick up a bit when the kids start moving around. And and one thing I found interesting, what it is, because of the type of movie it is, I didn't expect it to have full-blown credits in the beginning.
Right.
Yeah.
Not because we thought it was found footage, just because, like, it did the credits. I did thought it was interesting. There is a dedication to Joshua Buchalter. He was the audio. He was in charge of all the audio, and he tragically passed before the movie was filming. And then they were able to basically get all of his audio instead of re-recording it. And it's partially a tribute to him to use all of that. And that apparently is why some of the stuff is a little dumbed down, but it adds to the experience of what we're seeing.
Yeah.
The visual noise and the audio noise are also an essential part of the viewing experience, because the filmmaker wants your ears to play tricks on you. It wants your eyes to play tricks on you. It wants to take advantage of like lulling you into this. Oh yeah, there's just like a static white noise sound, and then the second they like play a shocking, jarring tone, it really gets you. Like it does that visually as well, where you're staring into the darkness, you're peering into the darkness. Am I seeing something? And I'm not seeing something. And then when a jump scare does happen, it's extra.
There's like three of them, the jump scares, and they
destroyed me.
All fucking got me.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And it was, and I will tell you, as somebody who watched it twice, we watched it once in the regular theater, and then we were lucky enough to see it a second time. With a director Q&A, so to go see.
Oh, that's amazing! I haven't even mentioned his name yet, Kyle Edward Ball.
It was incredible. I mean, like the second they announced it again, I was like, I was buying tickets. I was like, we have to go. I don't care when it is. I don't care what day it is. We sat in the front row. I fangirled out a little too much. But well, even,
so don't we have a picture?
We do have. Yeah, we can send you the picture.
Send that to you.
Yeah, so please do.
But watching it a second time, even knowing exactly where those jump scares are, it didn't make it better. It was a different experience, but it didn't make it better.
No.
It made the anticipation worse.
Yeah, so much of that movie, so much of it is about the anticipation anyway. So, like, knowing where they're going to happen, like, just feeds back into that.
For real. Yeah, did he say anything that, like, stood out about the movie? Because everything I kind of looked up, was he's very much like, it's on you. It's on you of the viewer to determine everything.
You know, he did maintain that vibe even with the Q&A. He even said something, I remember him saying, like, I put in certain things in the plot that I'm kind of waiting for people to pick up on. He did mention, you know, I've seen online people talking about how this is an allegory for child abuse, or this is for parental divorce, or this, that, and the other. He didn't say either way, you know, yes, it's that, or no, it's not.
I have that quote. I've literally the theory list up there, and you just named like basically all of them. It's like child blues. They're in purgatory. They're dead. I personally like the one where it was the director just fucking with us. It's all in there. I pulled, I Googled, like, what was, so like, the first thing you look up is, like, what's the point of Skinnamarink? You know, like, Google will give you a little, this person wrote, its purpose is to be nefarious. It just wants to terrify us. It's to bring us back of, like, little kids running around and being scared at night. And that's what it feels like. To me, the house they set up felt like a familiar house I've been in, walked around at night, and been afraid of.
Yes.
That was his childhood home.
Okay, yeah, it makes sense. It reminds me of like my cousin's home or something like that. It's very unnerving. Right.
Like you go to visit your grandparents, and that's kind of feels, and it's, you're, you know, everything's a little bit unfamiliar, but also a little bit familiar.
Yeah.
The promise of the movie before we saw it was, I don't know if this was from the director or where we heard the idea of, like, I think it was from the director. This movie is trying to recreate the feeling of, like, a deep nightmare you had as a child. And I went into that thinking that that's a very tall order. And I feel like it was, for me, very much delivered upon. Like, there's sometimes you have this experience of, like, you know, you remember when you were a little kid eating McDonald's ice cream cone. And in your memory, that is the most delicious thing in the But you go back and eat a McDonald's ice cream cone now as an adult, and maybe it doesn't hit the same way. And then you go to, like, randomly you go to the ice cream shop down the street and they have a custard and you taste it. And it is the taste of your memory. It lives up to the memory more so than the actual thing does. And I feel like Skin and Rink does that as a movie. It somehow translates to the adult experience what those childhood experiences were like.
Right? I get it.
Memory taste. It's like the end of Ratatouille.
It's like the end of Ratatouille. No, that this is that, no, that makes a lot of sense. It feels like, so I don't know about you guys. I, like, for most of my life, it's gotten better now. I get a lot of sleep paralysis.
Oh wow,
it's gone away, but, you know, it's kind of, but that this is a similar description of what a sleep paralysis could be like.
Okay.
Interesting.
You mentioned and I don't think it's about sleep paralysis or anything, but it's that similar, like, you can't really, you know where you are and you can't see anything going around. My thing with sleep paralysis is I always feel like someone's pushing my head down and I can't look up.
Okay. I
could get out of bed and know I'm in, you know, blah blah blah.
Right.
Gotcha.
And it hasn't happened. I'm wondering if it's going to happen tonight. But it hasn't happened.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
It's all about when you're out of your REM cycle and blah. It's been years. But this was a very similar feeling and description. And so that younger memory, I had a lot of night terrors with that. And, like, so this brings it back. Walking into the room, I mean, there's three really scary parts you could pull out of any horror, you know, put in the event, we talk about when you talk about any horror movie, and it's been in this one, is when they go up to the room and what the fuck was that? And the mother, sorry, there's noises around here.
I thought you were doing a bit, and I was like, oh no.
Okay. No, I heard just like house creak. I'm not, I told you, the whole house is dark. I'm going to freak myself out.
Dude, I keep looking over to your closet.
Do you? Yeah, that's funny. I don't have anything planned. Truly, this is all just organic.
They go up to the room. The mom's
The mom and they're like, who's that? And the back, and nothing really happens, but her back turned. Whew.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, and when that, she says, look under the bed. Fuck no.
And there's nothing under there, but the camera going under the bed is just like,
it's like, don't do that. What are you doing?
So viscerally, you want to reach into the screen and grab the viewer and be like, do not do that. Ugh. Yeah.
And then, you're right. And then the fact that they don't actually deliver a jump scare at that moment just leaves you like, when they cut from that scene, you're like, what?
We don't get a jump scare. To my memory, like, to what I just watched, we don't get a jump scare until after that, until I believe the Barbie on the ceiling and the little girl, like, it just dropped, or they, this is after the light drops, and that's scary as shit.
Yeah.
And this is right after, like, the bones are in the cloth. Closet right there, and he's talking to her, and you hear crackling. I'm about to close that door.
I think that you should.
All right.
Well, I can't sleep with the closet open.
Yeah, but see, now the problem is now we don't know what's going on back there.
No, no, I'm afraid something bad's going to happen.
Yeah, it's even worse.
We're watching the screen. Anything could happen.
Yeah, now that he, like, walked off screen, this is like.
Turn some lights on and close that door. This is staying in.
when you walked off screen, we thought it was going to turn into like one of those like found footage Zoom style horrors, you know, where all like
blood's just going to like,
jeez, guys.
Yeah.
I wasn't creeped out until I started sitting here. And you know, it's funny. I haven't been doing this show in this room, but because no one's home, I was like, I'll do it at the desk. I'll have the computer. No, I normally have the fucking cheesy DVDs behind me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the angled roof too kind of helps, you know, yeah. It's got that little bit of unsettling like
that. Thank you for bringing that up, because that was one thing I liked about the movie. The angling.
The angled ceiling.
No, the ceilings and like the color palette and everything, at least like, except when you did see color, it was pretty much like monochromatic, and it was all very deliberate, and everything's relying on lighting. I mean, I know Ball, the director, has talked about just using the TV to light half of the shots. And
right.
That was very like visually pleasing, and then but yeah, there are a few jump scares. I mean, the light dropping, the nothing happening with, you know, the closet and just listening. Kevin and Kaylee.
Yeah.
You know, her face being seen with that popping. That was like, that's the most traditional horror thing in the movie. Everything else is like, oh, yeah. I haven't seen this before.
I thought that Kaylee jump scare was the end of the movie.
I
thought that was the climax of the film. I thought everything was building up to that moment, and it would have been.
It would have worked.
For me, it would have worked. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that it continued and got worse and worse. And that's when it got me into the place of like, I'm gripping the armrests. I am begging God for this movie to end. But I mean, loving every minute of it. Like, again, this movie.
Yeah, this
movie did exactly what I needed it to do. Mm-hmm. I had a great experience with the movie. I don't think people who disliked it are wrong at all. I don't think it is wrong to not have a good experience.
No, but I think a lot of people are like, I like horror movies, you know, or I like blah, blah, I don't mind a thriller getting scared. And they have one thing, a childhood perception of that, or like a teen perception of that. And more than half the time, and I'm talking about someone who's like 20 years old and up. From what I found is most people go, that wasn't that scary. And it's like, yeah, because you're not going to be scared of the slasher. You're not really going to be scared of the possession if you think you like that stuff.
Right.
So this, I think a lot of people sat down going, I like horror movies, for like a date night at home.
No.
Because someone like me and you said, you gotta see this shit.
Right.
It's fucking crazy. And they just didn't vibe with it. That's my like take on a thing like this.
It's like you have to be, you're not sitting down for a slasher experience. You're sitting down for a, remember when you were a little kid and you were scared of the dark? Like, mm-hmm. You're that feeling. And I'm saying this as an adult who is still scared of the dark. Yeah. Like, I'm really glad you closed the closet. I can't sleep with the closet
door. It's funny. I did that as, like, aesthetic, but, like, I don't want anyone to be scared. Like, I rarely get, you know, scared of these things, but also at the same time, like, that's the fun of it, and I like that that still happens. So this is exciting. Yeah.
Facts, though. She makes us close the closet doors every single night.
I don't like it open. I did not sleep normally for at least a week after watching this movie, and that it's not an exaggeration.
Good to know.
I didn't sleep in the bed. For some reason, for me, sleeping in the bed feels, if I'm afraid, it feels like, well, the bed is a vulnerable place. If I go in there and I try to fall asleep, that's when the monsters will get me. But if I happen to fall asleep on the couch, they're not going to get me.
Oh, I get you. TV on, fall asleep. You know, I'm thankful that the Mets are playing at 10 o'clock on the West Coast tonight. and I got a full season of, I'm trying to learn how to play FIFA and other video games. Maybe play some Star Wars.
There you go.
I'll just do that till I fall asleep. So I get you.
99% of the time, I totally get what you guys are saying, but like for you, for when you were doing this for Skinamarink, that felt incongruous to me, because part of the horror of Skinamarink was that experience of like late night blue glow of the TV, you know, dancing shadows from that. Mm-hmm. Like, why did that not do that to you? Like, why did,
like, why was it scarier to fall asleep?
Why was it scarier to fall? Not scarier.
Part of it is, I also turned on a bunch of lights. I didn't just have the DeviOn. Well, I had a bunch of lights on.
You just have an old timey cartoon going.
That would get me. Yeah. That would get me. The old, if falling asleep, be like, oh, cartoons. Not those cartoons. You mentioned lights too, and speaking of that, I even think the night, like, they utilized the nightlight right in this, and yep. I remember we had those exact nightlights in our house.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
A lot of shit like that, right? Like in the toys they use, the naked Barbie, the big one in this is the talk phone, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh boy, that talk phone. When we went and saw it for the second time, the person sitting behind us brought their own talk phone from home and kept dropping it, and I was like, please, you have to stop.
That's bad. What is this, the Fast and the Furious popcorn bucket? I bought one. But yeah, I'm just looking at my notes again. It's these like slow camera pans, and then like I like, as we try to talk, it's hard to go through the plot of more of just like this and that happened. So all of a sudden things are on the ceiling and around. And Kaylee, I think you mentioned that, you know, there is an entity in the house dealing with the children.
Right.
And then at one point, the entity then goes, okay, stab yourself in the eye and remove, or doesn't, a little before that, removes Kylie's face. I'm Kayla Kylie.
I think it's Kaylee and Kevin.
Removes Kaylee's eyes and mouth, and then like I'm jumping way ahead here, like well towards the end of the movie, like Kevin is like, why did you do that? And he's like, because she disobeyed me.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck?
She wanted right. her mom. She wanted her mom and dad.
And the entity, I'm sure everyone picked up, I don't listen to anything new to Ed. It talks like how I know I talk trying to be scary as a little kid.
Yeah.
But like, what do you want to do? You know, like this.
Right.
Sorry, not trying to say, but that's like, that has to be on purpose. That's what every child talks like.
Right.
When they're trying to like be like a demon or something.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It has that voice. And it's like they did some interesting like layering with the audio. It sounded like maybe it was recorded in multiple different tones.
Oh,
they played it. Like it's an inhuman sound. Yeah. The whole movie is very whispery. Mm-hmm. Like everybody who's talking, and again, it's mostly the kids, it's in whispered, hushed tones. So everything feels like everything does feel like you're half asleep. You're in that like in between place where you can see things, your eyes can play tricks on you, your brain can play tricks on you with, like, you brought up the sleep paralysis, and that voice too feels disembodied and inhuman, but I mean was human, but it has that quality of like, if I were a kid this would be really scary, and you've put me into the place of being a child again, and so I find this really scary.
So have you ever, or both of you, have you ever watched a movie and felt like that, I mean, as an adult, whatever, to be in place of a kid and feel that way? This is only really one other time. I'm not saying scared, like that's what it felt like to be a kid and be scared. I have one example for myself, but
I would say no for me. Like, and I have, there's other movies that I think are scarier and more disturbing, but not in that way. Not in the like, this makes me feel like a child and scared of things that children are scared of.
It's different, right? Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's movies that are, I think, scarier or sat with me longer. And right. I know some people, I'm going to share my movie in a second. I know some people one of my buddies was texting about this. He's the one who was like, Skinamarink, he's afraid of Skinamarink. He goes, oh, I hated it, but then I kept thinking about it for 10 days, you know.
Yep. And that's,
I got a text, I logged this on Letterboxd, got a text from my friend Sam, can't wait to talk about Skinamarink with you tomorrow. I'm like, all right. So this to me, and I'm more getting creeped out talking to you guys about it, to be honest, than I was watching. I watched in the dark. There were times where I flipped the light on with the last 10 minutes going. So I was like, I don't know what the fuck's
understandable.
Happen.
Yeah.
That's understandable. That ending of that movie is
actually
fine.
I didn't flip the lights on. I ripped the blanket off the window because it was still so bright out and it was a lot more dramatic. the movie that did this to me, one scene, not the movie, one scene was the first Conjuring in the theaters.
Oh.
The two girls are in bed and they're sleeping and it's pitch black and she's like, there's something, you know, the way it was directed and the kids acted, it described being a child being afraid perfectly. Talking about sitting in bed and not feeling safe. Yeah. That like something's fucking there and it's going like your sibling going, shut the fuck up. And then the demon things, like cryptic ladies like on top of the armoire and it's like real quick.
Yeah,
and, I vaguely remember that. I need to go watch that movie.
And, no, that's a good scene.
And the movie itself is scary, and like it holds up pretty well. But like, it's not as scary as ever the first time you saw it. That one scene is what, for me, is what the vibe of Skinner Marink fully wanted to be. And that's the whole time I'm like, oh, you're waiting for that fucking demon looking thing popping up, and it doesn't.
Right.
Look, it does it so well. I might go back in and give the stars on Letterboxd if we're talking about it with you guys.
I mean, by the time you get to the end of the movie, and I don't know if we want to spoil. Do you spoil?
Yeah, we can spoil. Oh yeah, this is just talking. If you're clicking on the link to listen, it's to talk to learn about the movie and talk about the movie. So full spoilers and probably
by the whole time. By the time you get to the end. And the final frame is as close to any sort of payoff as we get in the movie is the hint of a face that is implied to be the entity.
Oh, I am so
that face at the end.
Yeah,
that's the entity, my guy. That is the entity coming to you, and I think it's possibly ambiguous, but the entity seems as if it is addressing you at that point. As
that's it comes what it felt out, like.
Yes, and it says it's telling you go to sleep. It comes to you in the end.
Yeah. excuse me. I was like, it's Kevin. It's still talking to Kevin. That's Kevin sitting up on his bed.
No,
because he ends it, and I was like, but notes are because it is talking to you. The whole thing is, I think, talking to us.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, this would be a terrible VR experience, or a great VR experience, depending
on your... Right,
right. But, like, Kevin's asking, I want to watch something happy. To me, they wrote a note. That's the director saying, hey guys, go home and watch something fucking nice.
Yeah.
And then go to sleep. Yeah. I'm going to watch, with my sweatshirt, I'm going to watch One Tree Hill after this, probably.
That sounds good.
Very good.
And just enjoy the dramas of bullshit North Carolina. It's that God that makes that so much creepier. That was the entity looking at, or
that's the entity. He comes finally, something materializes out of the visual snow. And it is, if you go back and if you look at a screen grab, it is a blob, like that's all it is. It is a white,
it's a barely visible,
barely,
not even, it's like gray.
You know what it is,
but at the time, it is the most, it was one of the most scary things I'd ever seen. Again, I'm watching it through my fingers, I'm begging God to end the movie.
This is the end, which was like, oh yeah, I forgot.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
you're also waiting. You're waiting for that, you know, that pop out, right? You end sinister, and the ghoul pops in the face of it, and you're like, well, that was unnecessary. So this changes everything. That was that end. That exact shot is. Are either of you like have bad eyesight?
I have terrible eyesight.
Okay, I have terrible eyesight. I
talk to you about it all the time, yeah.
Like, real bad. Like, can't move without my glasses or contacts in.
Same.
That's how things look without your fucking glasses.
Yep.
Like, middle of the night, I'd rather piss my bed than get up to go without my glasses.
I used to sleep in my glasses. Like, as I slept, I ruined many a pair of glasses because I could not fathom waking up in the night and not being able to see because what if you woke up in the night and you saw the entity and you couldn't see clearly? That, like,
that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Geez. So, yeah, I full like was like, okay, that's Kevin sitting up, and it's face. He's faceless because basically everything's been faceless.
Right.
I like that I have confirmation that it's the entity.
I mean, again, Kyle Edward Ball says, like, put what you will on this movie. So, like, this is your experience. So if that is a better interpretation for you, like, I wouldn't say it's wrong.
This is what I can come kind of the conclusion of, like, the Kyle Edward Ball thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a really weird example I'm going to use. Is, do you ever hear, like, these are terrible people. I don't condemn them. The advice that, like, was it of Ivanka Trump or whatever? What's the daughter?
That's Ivanka.
Got from her father. It's in one of the books. I've heard this. I haven't read the books. Is don't give any opinion. Don't say anything. And everyone will just project what they want on you. And a lot of, like, celebrity. I never heard it from them. Mm-hmm. That's why she does it. That's why, you know, that's why people all have that harsh of an opinion about blah, blah, blah. A lot of celebrities do it. A lot of, you know, it's easy to do if you just say little things and they go this. That's kind of this movie. I mean,
yeah,
it's not even, it's like, hey, put a bunch of stuff out there and I really want you to guess and figure it out. And I'm never going to give you an answer.
Right.
Yeah. That's kind of what's going, like, crazy, the section of it, right? It's like, yeah, but was he? I mean, I texted a friend and this was interesting. He was like, I have a theory and I'm just going to read a quick text. It's like that it's actually a reverse haunting. One of the kids, the boy, is dead and it's their point of view from being in the house not realizing they're dead with possibly an abusive father.
Yeah.
And I'm like, geez, that's a good theory. I think he did say, like, he may have heard it from somewhere. Shout out Jeff. Cannonball Jeff. But he, you know, like, that's just one of the million of theories we could come up with. And I'm really sorry I used the Trump to describe this movie. That
well, we're talking about horror, right? So, talking about theory stuff, I'm curious, like, one of the things, cause yeah, most of the movie is just like this completely, like, vague, you know, canvas, but there's this part towards the end, like 80% of the way through the movie where they actually do put some text on the screen.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, like day
570, day 522?
27.
527, okay.
Yeah.
And
I... Oh, 72, you were right.
Don't know what that... Like, I can maybe articulate, like, is Kevin stuck in this purgatory-ish thing for that many days? But
that's what I took it as.
What's your theory? That's what you took it as?
I did, because it was like, what's the... Why are we getting 572? 572 is meaning he's running around this house for... You know, it's been that long. Yeah. And then the way the... so then it's on... The text comes up across a tape recorder that we haven't seen. But once again, like, one... I'm just saying we have all kind of had something similar growing up or seen, and it's all the Legos and stuff more set up as a structure on top of the ceiling, and the hallway gets long and long. But the thing is, it turns into almost one of the, looks like one of the cartoons, the way that the colors and everything look, it looks more like an old. So I think it's on purpose and he's been in there that long, and the representation of the hallway growing longer is days and nights growing longer, and, you know, maybe it's to tell us, you know, Kevin is obedient and he's followed these rules, and the entity and house or whatever is letting him be.
So presumably that means the entity is going out and doing grocery shopping, right? Because otherwise, like, how's Kitty? Kevin? Yeah, how's he living? Like,
she's SpaghettiOs.
Just this facial blob, just kind of like pushing the grocery cart down the aisle.
I think it lends credence to the idea that Kevin has either died or is in some sort of not this dimension. I don't think he needs to eat where he is.
Yeah, it's like the lazy, none of us are the lazy, but it's like the lazy take of anything you don't understand. Like, I think it was purgatory the whole time, right? Like,
right.
Like, how many theories just come to, like, well, it was an allegory for purgatory. It's like, I just think you wanted to do weird shit and you needed an answer to sound smart on a Q&A.
There is a motif of, like, time loop in the movie. Like, there is the motif of, I think it's first demonstrated when, like, there's that one fucking like cartoon. And I know all the cartoons were like, I think the reason why those cartoons is because those were like free to use.
They're royalty free.
And there's that one fucking cartoon of the rabbit using his hands and disappearing. And there's that, that one note of ears over and over and over.
The toilet
where the toilet disappears.
It uses that sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the, I think the final, or maybe it's a callback. I don't know. There's another use of the time loop, and it is later on in the film when Kevin is presumably being tortured by the entity, and we see, we hear his screams, and we see blood spatter on the hallway. And then it goes back. Did you see like something in the background?
That was like dust or something falling.
That was an orb.
God, I'm about to go put a TV on in the house or like the fan and air conditioning back on.
I think motifs could potentially speak to the idea that there is some sort of time loop situation that this
has
gotten himself into.
No, that more fits what I think we're watching and going on, right? And there's that other one. Where you and it was gonna say, what is up with you guys and fucking people standing and picking movies with people standing in corners and things? Something that looks like someone, but it also could just be a doll or a toy, and then it disappears.
Yeah,
it's one of the final shots. It doesn't use the. It's funny the toilet whoop. I literally wrote, I was like, that's like Adult Swim stuff. That's like the no, and then but then there's nothing else like that has that. The adult swimminess of it, except for the toilet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What do you think was the point of showcasing the toilet disappearing? Like, it showcases the toilet disappearing in the same way it showcases the windows and doors disappearing. Right. Like, God, the kids presumably couldn't flush themselves. So why is that exit point also removed from the characters?
Maybe that... Yeah, I mean, this sounds like it's going to be sarcastic, but it's not like... But they gotta live in their own filth.
Oh yeah,
they're like
dehumanize further.
They just dehumanize you in some way. Of
there's also know. Like you know, like you said, they're certainly not escaping the house that way. So maybe it's just like a little bit of like a fuck you. You know, it's like this. It showcases the completeness of their isolation. That even this, like, we're even gonna take away this piping.
Right. Right.
And. I don't know. I mean, it is me jumping, like, really jumping far ahead or to conclusions. Little kids have a weird, I mean, like really little kids, like, top, like, have an affinity for the toilet.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but it's, like, something I feel like only kids are like, the toilet's in there.
Right.
Right.
There's also, this is such a bizarre connection, but, like... Do you remember the movie Look Who's Talking 2?
I do.
I remember that it exists.
Seen it not too long ago. How does Gnade cover it?
In which one of the children is terrified of potty training.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the toilet at one point is personified as a horrifying monster that speaks and is like, hey kid, give me this. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if there's something of that trying to tap into like that childhood fear that something scary about toilet training. Like, is it just another scary thing to children?
We could guess and connect all of these thoughts with that, right? Like, I guess I think being 140 minutes, I think certain, I don't think everything is on purpose, right? And some things are sure just in there to be scary and tricky. But I think things like that are purposely put in and there's probably more of a reason than not. When it was interesting hearing the kids talk and watch, and I have a 2.5-year-old nephew who's now like moving around, talking more, you know, being more of a playing more in this. And I was with him this weekend, and we gave him like not a squirt gun, but like a push kind of sort.
Okay.
And like, hey, wet, we got to be quiet, you know, and like. Mumbling baby whisper kind of, and shooting and kind of point, doing something I don't think he's ever seen, but like that's like the way of like, oh, go under there, it's a secret, you know. And he went under the couch, and there was a lot of that child behavior in the way that children were talking, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, like they nailed that. Like that's how a kid moves around.
Yeah. The walking on the carpet, the like the not wanting to go upstairs to turn the nightlight back on, the just all, I mean, capturing those specific, those like very specific aspects of childhood. I mean, that's what got me about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think if you didn't like the movie, I totally get it. But those are the things that allowed me to buy in so fully.
I think, and talking to you guys too with it, and to get a movie like this and like it, right, and to get creeped out by it, like, you have to be an empathetic person,
sure,
even though there's not much going on. Like, I don't, like, I think you have to be a watcher that feels shit, and not everyone is.
Right, right.
I mean, I do find that if and when I recommend this movie to folks, like, I don't think I've recommended it to any parents without kind of giving the warning of, like,
yeah.
This actually involves, like, the main characters are children, and it's children going through terror. Like, I think that could be a really hard watch for some people. For
yeah.
That reason of empathy.
Just, like, new parents or things like that, or, yeah. Like, yeah. So, like, that's good. It's a good note to give to recommendation. Like, you're dealing with kids, and it's terror, and it's not kind to the children.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a movie where we see them
come out of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The kids aren't scrappy enough to get out of this situation. It is
well
devastating.
I think that movie also pulled some, like, speaking of kid stuff, pulled some visual cues, and this is way too much of a stretch, from the Are You Afraid of the Dark intro.
Oh, that's
of, like,
too much of a stretch. That blue lighting.
The blue lighting, the swings going, there was the clown statue. Not clown, it's like a
there's a clown statue, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it's a clownish statue. Yeah, there's a clown statue, there's a big fan. It's just very, our intro Are You Afraid of the Dark is very abstract.
Yeah.
And, like, that's what a lot of people, I love that show, I still watch it today, but that's what a lot of people remember it being, is the intro.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the music, and, I mean, that, you said audio is a huge thing. The music to this, using the non-domain cartoons as your soundtrack, like, fuck off.
Yeah.
You
know?
There's been a couple times where I've, like, turned on, you turn on something to fall asleep to, and it's like old music from a radio in the background, and I'm like, I can't do that anymore. And they'll usually have, like, a Tom and Jerry, like, thing going.
Yeah.
That's ruined. That's ruined forever.
You know,
certainly for sleep.
Yeah.
It's, I wonder what the, it's ruined forever. I wonder what the life of this movie is going to be. After like that hype died down, right? I mean, like, it's still there. I think people are still like, oh my God, this. And I'm curious to see this October, your like spooky season, if it gets back into the, oh, we're firing up Skinner Marine because we want to get creeped out.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great question.
I'm not sure it has the rewatchability of something like a more classic October movie. It doesn't have necessarily the rewatchability of like a Halloween or a Jason X. It's a completely different style of movie. But I think that what you said earlier about like it being kind of like a challenge of like being as like another version of Bloody Mary, I think that will have
it's a movie, it's the Dare movie, it's that, it's and I think it has to hit, like, I mean, it'll hit us, and I think people that are searching movies like this and things, but your tweens, and that word of mouth. I don't even say teens, because I remember, probably talked to this on our Blair Witch episode, I remember being like 17-year-old and like being at like people with girlfriends, and then like, you know, that kind of like high school-y thing where hanging out in some basement, but like it's for people to hook up, and people putting on the Blair Witch, and virtually everyone going, oh, I don't get the big deal of this.
Yeah.
You know,
you're too cool for it when you're 17.
Yeah. And I,
you got to come back to it at 37.
And I could straight up see Skinamarink doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just curious. Like I said, with life, like, it's wild to me that this is getting, like I said, it's getting like these physical releases that like make no sense to me, because it's one of the ones where like, if I saw it out in the wild, I'd buy it, but I like owning, owning things. Sure. And maybe if I ever, watch it again. This is something to compare it, kind of go a full full circle. As I said, I talked about a movie that reminded me of this in the sense of it was very abstract, called House. Mm. House was a movie that was forgotten, and then it's only, at the time, it was only released and then found by the Criterion Collection. This is one of those abstract movies where, like, in other times, that's probably the life it lives, where, like, Vinegar Syndrome or, like, one of these, like, third boutique find it and go, let's give it a life.
Right, right.
You know, and instead of this being, like, one of the most reviewed movies on Letterboxd, it probably has, like, 430 reviews and 1,000 people saw it.
Right.
You know, there's a world where that exists.
It's interesting that you mention House, just because I recently heard from somebody who just watched it that the person who wrote the film, which I don't have their name at the top of my head, very sorry, but the person who wrote the film asked their daughter.
Tyler Ball.
Yes. I think that I could be, I heard this from somebody, so maybe it's a wrong story, but asked their daughter, what are the things that scare you?
Yes.
Like, the things that scare you. And then built a movie around that. And I think that that kind of taps into some of the similar things as Skinamarink. They're very different movies, but maybe, children are an untapped resource.
I have that. It was his daughter, or one of his kids. He didn't specify. But they're untapped resource.
Yeah.
They,
you were scared of as a kid, and you will probably scare people with that still. Like, those fears exist in us for a reason. And I think that something like Skinamarink taps into shared fears we had as children. And like, those things are shared fears for a reason. Like, you brought up your sleep paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks who suffer from sleep paralysis, and I'm obviously not saying this for your benefit, you know, but a lot of folks who suffer from that tend to share similar experiences or see similar things.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me think that whatever's going on with sleep paralysis is tapping into something universal, the same way the fears that are presented in Skinamarink is tapping into something universal.
Yeah.
I think that that's, the best horror movies do that. They tap into something that is some sort of animal fear in our deep brains.
That's what it is. It's a flight or flight. It's an animalistic, just deep, and that's what's going to get you. And if you don't have that, that's why it's not going to hit.
Sure.
It's like, yeah, anyone would be afraid of, like, I'm trying to think of something really scary, but it's very just like the stranger situation of, oh, people came to kill you, got nothing to do, and the way it's done. 10 out of 10 times, everyone's afraid of that movie.
Right.
Or the concept of it.
Right. Home invasion is
home invasion. Like, but if we share it all, and for the most part, we all sounds at least three of us shared an experience growing up at some point that reminded us of something going on in the Skinamarink. I mean, the hallway with the titty light bulb was my senior year college apartment hallway. It was terrifying. It had that, you know, the titty light.
Boob. Yeah.
Yep.
And like, now my wife, girlfriend at the time, but didn't like walking down that hallway. It was it was very old and creepy. And this movie does a good job of putting it all together.
I think it's going to hit specifically for people of a certain age.
I was just about to ask that.
Thank you. Yes.
95. Like, I think that folks around, you know, of our generation, it's tapping into something that we share. And then, again, just talking about the analog horror thing, analog horror seems to be very, like, the generations coming after us seem to be very captivated by that. There's something about our childhood experiences that is even scary to them. They didn't experience it, but they look back at the style of media we were experiencing and physical media and the things that we were going through and making their own horror movies about it or horror videos on YouTube. I would love to show this movie to my parents or your parents or somebody's parents and see, like, does this scare you in the same way that this me and others who came out?
The interior design of the house
I'd love to do.
Is something that I would wonder how that affects people generationally, right? Because, like, that's, you know, we talked about that way back at the beginning, but, you know, the house reminds you of, you know, like your uncle's place, your grandparents. Mm-hmm.
That's what it was. Like, not my house for some reason, but right, a relative's
exactly.
house.
Exactly. Right. But, would that be true for, like, would my grandparents watching that think that, like, oh, well, that's my house. That's not scary.
I don't know. That's a great point. I mean, like, I think I could logistically get my mother-in-law to watch this. She's pretty,
please
like,
do.
Yeah.
Please do.
My parents, no. They would just go, this is dumb. Like, I know that my mother-in-law specific, I think, and that's a good point because you're right. The younger, the Gen Zs are obsessed with that era of like the 90s and early 2000s. And what you brought up, makes me think of, this is a rarity where it's 1995, but they're not giving us the fake version of 1990, the colors and the things. It's just, I don't know how the year reminds me of the movie. I mean, I'm 92, so I'm 31. So, like, I remember that time in the 90s is what I'm trying to say. Without, like, I mean, not 1995, but, you know, the type of toys, the cordless phone, the fucking blue TV with the green outline numbers in the corner. Mm-hmm. And you don't see that, like, in a movie that's like, we're represented in 1995. Like, sure. They're going to go, like, block. The scene in the movie is someone's going to go out, go get Blockbuster, you know, drink a...
on their skateboard.
Yeah, on their skateboard and drink, like, a branded Coke of, like, Space Jam or something.
Right.
Crystal Pepsi.
A Crystal Pepsi. Oh, man. That's another tangent. There's a great Human Giant bit about Crystal Pepsi.
Oh my god.
But yeah. No, there's a really that's a really good point. So, like, yeah, generationally, where is that? Because we're in the same years of a generation that relates, right? And everyone I've talked to is that,
right?
And like, I wonder what my Gen Z coworkers think of this.
I want to know.
I am very curious.
I mean, the fact that it went viral on TikTok in that way, like, that again feels a youthful way for word of mouth to work. The fact that the word of mouth spreads so heavily on this particular app, like, that I think does speak to the sensibilities of the film.
Oh, this doesn't get its run without TikTok. This is you know, what Blair Witch Project, not Blair Witch, we talked about. This is what, like, Paranormal Activity was, like, get it in your theater, and you got to go online and put your zip code in and the plot, you know, and then you find out years later. It was already coming to your theater. It was just a way to get you excited.
Great marketing technique.
Yeah. But it's amazing. I think I could just keep going all day with, like, it reminds me of this and cool like this. So, anything we haven't talked about or brought up that you just really want to bring up about this movie?
I have one thing.
I have one thing that's probably I'm going to be calling you back tomorrow and being like, oh my God, I forgot this. But I just wanted to bring up the David Lynch connection, just because we talked a lot about, like, is Kyle Edward Ball, like, what does he say about this movie? He's not really interpreting us. And there's been a lot of conversation, you know, calling this a Lynchian film. When we did go to the Q&A, David Lynch actually sent like a welcome package with, like, I think, you know, Blu-rays of his movies and some, like, LA stuff. So that connection exists, but I think it also does exist in the, I don't think David Lynch makes movies like this. I do think he makes movies that occupy a similar dream space. And I think he also doesn't like to tell you what his movies mean. I could be wrong, but I think he famously does not like to interpret for you. And, you know, if that's something that this director, that Kyle Edward Ball is choosing to do for this movie in particular or for a career, I mean, there's a blueprint for it. And there is something to say about horror that it's such a conversation with its viewers. It's such a conversation with its viewers, and tapping into that like unexplainable dream space. Like that's more, sharing that conversation is more intimate and is more powerful than the director just simply explaining it to you. So,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The old adage that you'll never show something as scary on screen as what the viewer will be able to imagine in their own mind.
This is the one movie that did that.
Yeah. It nails it.
Got to the blob at the end. I was like, oh God, I'm so fucking
sad. Yeah, and I didn't even interpret it as the fucking blob. I was like, well, that's the kid we've been following.
You have to go back and watch it. I need to see what you think on a second viewing, because I have not heard that interpretation.
We're watching movies on the projector tomorrow night. Maybe I throw this one up. Oh, everyone will.
There you go.
Yeah.
Outside.
Outside on the projector in the dark. I just started getting into, like, David Lynch stuff. Like, I just finished season one of Twin Peaks like two weeks ago.
That's on our list.
I gotta start season two. It's been in my, I've started it, stopped it, like the first episode so many times. Yep. I finally did it. But you bring up David Lynch, and I think that's a good point of it, is just is the style, the way the director's going about it, I think is in the inspiration of him, but it's, you're not going to go back to back. And I think, like, obviously David Lynch has more of a narrative voice to what he's doing than just, this is a blueprint. This reminded me a lot of, this would be my last note, hopefully, but I'll, like,
you said Chris, you had one more thing. Yes.
Chris has one more thing.
Mine's super important. So I'll get to it last.
Yeah. My last note of it is, it reminded me of every movie that plays when you go to a museum and it's just playing on the wall of, like, this artist used to do this, and you don't listen to, you don't, I should say you don't, I don't sit down to go, ah, yes. Like, we just went to the Andy Warhol Museum.
Okay.
This feels like, we visited Pittsburgh, went in the world, and they had all these movies he made playing up. And, like, my wife went to me and she was like, do you make good movies? And I was like, no. They're just like art stuff.
You know, now but that, like, you're saying that, it makes me feel like there's this weird meta sense that, like, Skinamarink could have been playing on the screen in Skinamarink. Like, it's almost, you know, like the cartoon itself, like, could have been the movie Skinamarink playing on that.
Oh, you know how we're talking about your mind plays tricks on you?
Yeah.
When the light is being shined on the CRTV and it's reflecting back, I thought it was the movie on the TV. I mean, like, real briefly, so I'm not, like, you. But, no, this is something, like, this is a movie where if we went to, let's say we went to 20 haunted home haunts this year, it's playing on the TV, someone's projecting it somewhere, because it just exists as this background thing that looks creepy also.
Yep. It's like literally that episode of The Office. I've heard this reference so many times. It's gonna break. There's an episode of The Office in later seasons where the character Gabe brings a movie to watch for Halloween party at the office. And it's just like a horrifying, disjointed series of black and white images that everyone's like, what the fuck is this? And he's like, perhaps the filmmaker knew that even in, I'm misquoting, even narrative was
comforting. I know what you're talking about.
Structure of narrative was comforting. And I'm like, that's Skinamarink.
That's Skinamarink. That's a museum movie playing on the wall. And you're like, oh, yeah, I don't know. I want to get through this museum. I don't want to sit down for 20 minutes to watch, like, people rubbing each other.
Yeah.
But no, that is The Office. That's that. And it's, but I clearly we've let Chris get to his point. To say we've talked and we've gone through so many lanes, and this is more than I was expecting, to be quite honest with you. And
we could keep going, honestly, forever and ever.
I have no end time.
Well, no, let's get to whatever your last.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask you if you had noticed the Lego anachronism, because that was the big thing. Did you notice or read about the Lego anachronism?
I think I did see something about this.
So they show the Legos early on, and in the pile there's this, like, piece remover tool,
Lego separator.
Lego separator.
I remember this.
Yeah, and like that didn't exist until like the
bright orange,
like 10 years ago. And so Lego fans watching the movie saw that and were like, "Wait a minute, that's not 1995." So
I think some people even thought like, "Oh, is this some sort of like like symbolism? Oh, this right. It's not actually 1995, right. And they like somehow are time traveling." I think that people looked really hard.
Speaks to the time loop nature.
Sure.
When we went and saw the movie the second time, the director said, I think he said he didn't
play. Yeah, he actually talked about it.
Legos growing up, and he got these Legos from like a Lego enthusiast friend. Instead of going through, he just like dumped them all out.
Yeah, because they're Legos.
It's so specific, but it's like, it's weird because like when I was watching it, I noticed it, and I was like, that is ultra, ultra niche specific. Like nobody else. But then it like turns out that it's actually something that like,
A lot of people.
Oh, there's
a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah, the Lego fanatics. I know a couple Lego fanatics. Like, they would notice it.
Yeah.
But, and then you're like, they made the movie for $15,000. They weren't.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There was no set decorator on task, like it's Mad Men going, well, those cufflinks really weren't in 1959.
Right. The phone that we talked about, not the actual phone, the phone toy, was not in the original like script of the film. It wasn't until Kyle Edward Ball went home to his parents' house, pulled out a bunch of toys that his mom had saved, and found that and went, oh, okay, we have this. We can put this into the movie. He also swears that he didn't play with that toy as a kid. He doesn't know where that toy came from, so maybe it's really haunted.
It looked haunted.
For sure haunted.
That's one of those ones you go to the Goodwill. I go to the Goodwill or the thrift. I'm like, nah, we'll buy our toys at Target this week.
You were meant to stay here.
Lego. I mean, you know what? I like you said, I keep going around and finding different things, which again, full transparency, didn't expect. But yeah, just super creepy. In this, I know that's the most vague, boring way to put it, but super creepy. And if I were to recommend it, I would just say set your ambiance upright. Like, it's weird to say with a movie, like, set yourself up for success. And like, I think like it goes to like, everyone has a different definition of what they think a good movie is and a bad movie and what they should be. And, you know, if you got to set yourself up for blah, 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 does that actually make it good? And you're like, no, that's why I think it's like an experience.
Right.
You know, we all want to see a comedy with a bunch of people or more than yourself. Just probably laugh more.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah.
I did scream. I did jump. Ooh. No, I screamed. I jumped at the first light drop and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I definitely swore at a couple of the.
Because you did.
Yeah. I definitely was like, Jesus Christ. Like a couple of those jump scares.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. And there's, I'm sure, some plotty things and words of the 45 words they uttered.
Right.
Sure, we missed some. But yeah, I'm content with what we've talked about today. In the sense of like, there's a lot here.
I just appreciate you sitting down to watch this movie because it's polarizing. It's not. Okay, there's a motorcycle going by.
Oh, you're good. Just didn't pick any of it up.
It's not. It's not an experience where you're like, cool, I'm going to sit down and watch like The Conjuring. I'm not going to sit. It's not sitting down and watching that. It's not sitting down and watching Sinister. It's sitting down and watching something that's not really a movie. Like,
no, it's an experience. I want to tell people, like, have you guys played any like horror video games?
Yes.
Like, so the survival ones, like it's like, I think the best way to do it is someone was like, oh, I don't really want to play one of those games, but I want the feeling.
Yeah.
Kind of put them in a dark room or the laptop in bed with the lights off, with the headphones on, like this.
Yeah.
Like, that's the same, this tense, something might get me, and a lot of times it doesn't.
That's a very good analog. There's horror video games where I've literally put them down and not picked them back up because that feeling's too intense.
Amnesia.
Yeah, Amnesia, Dark Descent. We'll never finish that game. Too scary. But yeah, and that's definitely present in Skinner Rink. It is relentless. Like, it does not give you punches. It does not give you any relief. It grabs hold of your. It's literally like that scene in Clockwork Orange where the guy's eyes are being held
open. Oh yeah, and
feel like I'm watching. Yeah,
and I'll also say that now that we brought up Amnesia, it also there's another element of the like the kids, the fact that it's kids. There's a like a helplessness to your POV. The
vulnerability.
Oh.
Vulnerability and helplessness. That's the same. That's like why Amnesia is so scary, is because you can't actually bash the zombies over the head with a nail bat. You don't have a weapon. You just have to hide. And that feels like similar to what's going on in Skinamarink, where like they're just two little kids. The parents aren't there for whatever reason, or they're incapacitated for whatever reason. So there's this like extreme level of like vulnerability and inability to like change the circumstances. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're watching, you're helpless. That's all. I did think of one thing, so I'm so sorry, because like I said, I'm a terrible podcast host. There was influence of this too. So there's the other. You know what was in the end of the movie before we see the entity's face? It so stands out of the movie, and I think it's mimicking the Texas Chainsaw Massacre shit of the photos that don't have faces, and you hear the sound of clicks and a shutter.
Yeah.
And it's nothing we've seen so far. And I just wanted to mention that because it reminded me of that in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original or remake, both is the shutter and then the, you know, you see in the black and white and then it moves on. And this did this almost the same thing, like a click, but it was more like, I don't know if you guys have remember the sound or her like old slides shifting.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
It was like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just another creepy ass thing this movie does. It's out of nowhere. It's almost like now that I know that that's the entity in the end of the movie, that Kevin died, and like if we were to look at this as a traditional like movie with like camera work and stuff in frame and like in focus, of like a camera going through a house and showing like the blood on the walls and the photographs before we hit like the body in the room.
Right.
You know, like just think of like the end of Taxi Driver or some shit. Sure. Like that's what that scene is to me. And I'm sure that scene means something else to five different other people.
Sure. But whatever your interpretation is, what you are seeing is the children being erased from their own photos. Mm-hmm. It was scary. It was very scary.
But yeah, I mean, it's the silly part is you guys can't see it. I have a million Nightmare on Elm Street shit looking at me, and like this is what like Freddy Krueger wishes he made people do in their nightmares.
Oh, yeah.
Poster right here.
He cannot hold a candle to
the Skinamarink.
This guy. Yeah, he cannot hold a candle to the Skinamarink.
Skinamarink's gonna get me. I'm joking. I'm gonna be creeped out later.
Just make sure you have one of those nightlights.
Yeah.
I'm gonna play video games.
There you go.
All night.
That's better. Don't play Amnesia.
No. But anyway, I will end it now. Just as I said, we keep spinning in circles with I just saw another one of those. The fucking fucked up dollhouse out of nowhere that was lit. Like the fuck. As I'm gonna say, this is thank you so much for choosing this. It was a ton of fun, and there was a lot here to it. So I will watch anything. I asked it before, I'm a broken record. Anything else you guys want to add? And like, you did it at the top, but where can everyone find Cool or Just Weird and you guys?
Yeah, anywhere podcasts.
I will say one thing.
Yeah, here we go. I'm cool.
Don't interrupt the plug. Just saying,
this movie cost $15,000. The guy filmed it in a house that he had access to using his own things. Like, if you want to go make a movie, maybe there's ways to make a movie. It just felt very accessible. Like, this was not somebody who lives in LA. It's not somebody who had a lot of connections. It was somebody
Canadian film.
Yeah. I want to make a movie and figured out how to do it on a very small budget. And I really appreciate that.
It's amazing.
And it's a similar budget to Blair Witch. I think 15,000 was the Blair Witch budget as well.
About that, yeah. I don't have it up. I think it was a little more, but we'll leave it. But yeah, thank you for saying that, because the ingenuity of its creativity was going to spiral me into another topic, but I'm just not going to say it.
Plug us, go.
Yes, Cultigious Weird. We are on anything, anywhere you listen to podcasts. We're on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. We have our own website,
Culture Just Weird. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at Culture Just Weird. And we did actually do an episode on the movie Midsommar. So
we did.
A little crossover for you horror fans.
Yeah, I heard my name, and then I was like, I got to message these guys.
Yeah, that's Ari Aster. Whew. Yeah, that's a whole, that's another episode.
Thank you so much for having us on. I'm so glad we got to, again, I could talk about this movie forever and ever and ever, so I'm glad we got to channel that energy somewhere.
Yeah, anytime.
For having us on.
Always. You're all the best. Stay frightful, everyone. You know where you can find us. Bye.
Welcome to Flyover State of Fear.